It's time for Blessed to Play on EWTN Radio, uncovering the role that faith plays in the lives of sports professionals from around the country. And now, here's your host, Ron Meyer.
Fire, score!
My guest today received the Ford Frick Award in 2007, entering him to the broadcast wing of the National Baseball Hall of Fame. Denny Matthews, now entering his 50th season as a broadcaster, is only the fifth Major League broadcaster to spend 40 seasons with one club, that being the Kansas City Royals. Joining us is the Hall of Famer himself, Denny Matthews. Denny, welcome to Blessed to Play.
Hi, Ron. Thank you.
Well, you grew up in the land of Lincoln and attended college in that same state at Illinois Wesleyan. And in fact, you played football and baseball there, so you played at a competitive level. And somehow you had a desire to remain in sports, but behind the mic. So tell us about that passion for broadcasting and how that came to be.
I was very fortunate when I was in college. I played football and baseball, as you mentioned. And in between, I didn't play basketball. So the local radio station broadcast, well, there are two universities there, Illinois Wesleyan and Illinois State, and four high schools at the time. So there was a lot of wintertime basketball, and the radio station did a lot of games, and they were asking me after my sophomore year of football, which turned out very well, if I would like to help them do basketball. It sounded like fun. I think they gave me $5 a game or something, which when you're in college, it's great, walk around money. So my last 3 years in college, in between playing football and baseball, I had a wonderful experience to broadcast or help broadcast high school and college basketball. And my senior year, along with doing some of the games, they gave me a little five-minute show. After practice, I'd run down to the station and do a little 5 or 6 minute radio show, sports show. So I was getting wonderful experience while still in college. Illinois Wesleyan, small enough, we didn't have a radio TV major as many of the big universities do now. So I was getting some great on-the-job training with a wonderful local radio station in Bloomington.
How about broadcasters themselves at the major league level, maybe National Football League? Is there anyone that you followed during your young career?
Growing up in Bloomington, normally you're about halfway between Chicago and St. Louis. So my dad was a Cardinal fan. In fact, he played baseball at Illinois State. He was the first All-American baseball player at Illinois State. So he passed on his love of baseball to myself and my three younger brothers. And so that's really kind of where it started. And I was listening to Harry Carey, Jack Buck, Jack Brickhouse, Jack Quinlan, the Chicago broadcasters, St. Louis broadcasters, and then later on, why I think like most people that enjoy baseball and you're young, you lay in bed at night and twist the radio dial around, and being in the central part of the country, I could pick up a lot of the other broadcasts and games from different spots. So, yeah, it was great on-the-job training, just laying there at night when I was 7, 8, 9, 10 years old and listening to the Cardinals, and little did I know, but I was getting some pretty good lessons on how to broadcast baseball. Didn't know it at the time, obviously. When you're that age, you're more interested in playing. You don't think about broadcasting. But I guess I was just getting it into the brain, laying there in front of the radio on a summer night and listening to those really good broadcasters.
Yeah, great stuff. Blessed to Play, Ron Meyer, chatting with the Hall of Famer, Denny Matthews, announcer for the Kansas City Royals. So these names that you mentioned, the Jack Bucks of the world and, you know, the Harry Careys, they all have a different style. But how would you describe your style of broadcasting? And what have you implored as a broadcaster over your career to capture the moment?
I was fortunate when I broke in. I was the number two guy to Buddy Blattner, who had come from the Angels to the Royals. And so from 1969 until Bud retired after the 75 season, I worked with him, and he gave me some great advice over the first couple of years we worked together. And one of the most important things was, I want you to be yourself. I want you to develop your own style. I want you to broadcast the game the way you want to do it. Don't try to imitate me or think you have to do the game like me, because if we go down that road, why, all we're going to get is a crummy imitation of me, which made a lot of sense to me. And he said, I'm not going to crowd you during your broadcast, during your three innings. I did three, he did six. And he kind of stayed out of the way, but we talked back and forth as the occasion demanded. We didn't, neither one of us forced ourselves on the other one. And he said, hey, if you see something and I don't, jump in. I want to know. We'll talk about it. And the vice was versa, because he would see things. He played baseball on the major league level, and he broadcast. He was a pretty famous national broadcaster when I joined him, or he joined me. And so he was wonderful. He was a great mentor. He was a great teacher. He had some great ideas about how a broadcast should sound. So I took that at heart, and I do the games the way I want to do it. I think I'm very fair. I don't see just one team on the field, and I think some guys do. It's their team. It's their home team. So the other team really is irrelevant. But, hey, the other team might play really well on any given night, and your team might not, or vice versa. Both teams might play well. Both teams might play poorly. You have to, if you're just doing half the game for half the audience, or if you're not giving credit where credit is due, or if you're not assigning blame where if somebody makes a mental error and the game is decided by that, well, hey, you got to say it, whether it's your team or the other team. So that's the way I've always taken it. And I've listened to the other broadcasters, and I pick things up from them, but I never try to imitate, because like Buddy said, that's going to be a lousy imitation, whoever you're trying to imitate.
Well, Bill James, a baseball historian and statistician, said this about you. His voice has a pleasant timbre which suggests a cheerful occasion. His inflection varies naturally, so it's neither falsely enthusiastic nor boring. He has a dry, understand humor that drifts through much of his audience undetected. One cannot learn these things at the microphone. They are given. Do you see your gift, if you will, as a broadcaster, as something God-given?
Well, I think probably some of it, sure. And you say, well, you were destined to do this or do that. I think you can go down any path that you choose. But I think that it's helpful if you have an interest in something. If you are, as you say, gifted, then if you follow that path, you'll probably do okay. And so I think there's a lot to what you said. Yeah, Ron.
Blessed to play, Ron Meyer. I'm chatting today with Denny Matthews. And boy, what a career he has had in the Hall of Fame. A Ford Frick Award winner in 2007. 50th season as a broadcaster. Amazing stuff with the Kansas City Royals now. And we're going to talk a little bit about some of the highlights of his career as a broadcaster with the Royals. So you call George Brett's 3,000th hit, World Series. Is there a special call or moment for Denny Matthews over all these years with the Royals?
People ask that question quite a bit, and I have to say my biggest thrill, the most important game to me, was the first game that I ever broadcast. That was in April of 1969, working with Buddy Blattner. And I think it's like a pitcher winning his first big league game, a hitter getting his first big league hit. You always remember that, and I always remember that game. It was a wonderful game. We played the Minnesota Twins in Kansas City, and the Twins were very good at that time. In fact, they had won the division the year before. And the Royals won the game in the 12th inning. And as fate would have it, I was doing the 12th inning because, as we still structure the broadcast, once you get into extra innings, you just trade back and forth. I did the 10th, he did the 11th. We won it in the 12th. And again, as fate would have it, I was the first person to ever say the Royals win. So, yeah, game one, and you talk about all the playoff games in the World Series, and there were some wonderful games regular season between the Royals and the Yankees, who had a great rivalry in the 70s, and the A's and the Royals had a great rivalry because the A's had been in Kansas City, and they left in 67, and the Royals became a big league team in 69. So there were some great rivalries, some great games, and really, you go back to game one, my first big league broadcast, my first big league win, my first big league hit. And that was all wrapped into one.
Yeah, great stuff. What has changed from the broadcasters of your time, and I'm referring to the Scullies, the Bucks, the Harwells, to the modern-day play-by-play guys we see today?
I think another thing Buddy Blattner told me was, if you're going to be worth your salt as a big league broadcaster, you have to tell the people not only what happened, but why. In other words, you've got to be your own analyst. And I think now, as things have evolved, I think a lot of broadcasters have an analyst or an ex-player or a color guy, whatever you want to call them. And some of them now just really, and it's just the way it works, and it's, I'm not criticizing, but they just do the play-by-play. They tell you what happened, and they rely on the other guy to tell you why. So one guy tells you what happened, the other guy tells you why, but as Buddy pointed out to me, and I think all those other broadcasters were of that mindset. In other words, they did the play-by-play. They not only told their audience what happened, but also why it happened. And I took that to heart, too, and I played the game long enough to have a pretty good feel for it, especially infield. And you learn through the years on the pitching, the catching, and every other position and strategy, and you learn. I think you learn something, or you should, almost every time you sit down and do a game. And that served me pretty well. So I took Buddy's words to heart, and I'd not only tell the people what happened, I tell them why.
Specifically to baseball, on the TV side, I don't really think it's play-by-play, because basically the quote-unquote play-by-play guy is just recapping what the viewer is seeing. But on the radio side, you really have to get a mental image in the head of the respective listener to have them capture what's going on the field. That's an art in and of itself. So obviously you see the differences between TV and radio, but talk about the whole dynamic of being a play-by-play guy on the radio side.
Well, obviously, radio side, you're painting the picture. TV, the picture's already there, and you talk around it. So you also have the freedom on radio to go anywhere you want. As doing, and I've done a lot of TV, too, but you're beholden to the director and the producer, and you don't have the freedom that you do on radio, because you can go anywhere you want on radio, describe anything you want, but when TV is showing somebody in the crowd, you might make reference to that, or they're showing the third base coach, and you can ask for shots when you're doing TV. You can ask the director, would you give me a shot of the Royals bullpen, for instance, and they'll do that, and you can talk about what you want to talk about, but there is just more freedom in radio.
All right, let's take a break. On the other side, what inspires this Hall of Fame broadcaster in his everyday life? Don't move. Keep it right here. This is Less to Play.
Now there's a fast and easy way to get in touch with EWTN, the EWTN Everything Number. Call 1-800-447-EWTN to get the latest information on programming, special events, pilgrimages, and more. Our EWTN Family Viewer Services representatives are ready to help you with whatever your needs may be. The EWTN Everything Number, 1-800-447-EWTN. EWTN.
Somebody told me the best evangelical tool is EWTN Radio, and I've been listening to it and am in RCIA.
Welcome back to Blessed to Play. And now, here's your host, Ron Meyer.
Welcome back to Blessed to Play. Ron Meyer joined today by Denny Matthews. What a career as a broadcaster in Major League Baseball. If you listen to the first half of the show, he's a Ford Frick Award winner. That means he's part of the National Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. So if you're in Cooperstown, check out the broadcast wing and learn something more about Denny Matthews. Covering the Kansas City Royals, now entering his 50th season. How about that, folks? But we're going to talk something else that's important in Danny's life besides baseball and broadcasting, and that is his life of faith. Denny, you're Catholic, but talk about what faith means to you.
Well, I think it's a guideline to how you should live your life. And you try to do that every day, and we're all human, and sometimes we run off the track a little bit, but I think it's important to have the values and the right and the wrong and the way you should live your life. And I think if you project that, it affects a lot of other people, and especially young people. If that's the way it works, then you're better for it.
You meet a lot of athletes. You meet a lot of broadcasters. Are there people in your occupation of men of faith and that have inspired you during your career?
Well, you see a lot of the players who are of that ilk, and I think one of them would be Dan Quisenberry, who I was very good friends with, and Quiz was really the epitome of living his life that way, and his family was oriented in the same fashion, and he was just such a nice person, and then he was also one of those people that was a giver. He wasn't a taker. He was a giver, and I always admired him for that.
Blessed to play Ron Meyer, joined today by Denny Matthews, a longtime broadcaster for the Kansas City Royals. Faith at the ballpark. I think you've been in this game a long time. There's mass at the stadiums now. Obviously, for the players that are non-Catholic, there's baseball chapel. But have you seen an openness to faith evolve over the course of all these years?
Yeah, I have, and I think most people now, most players and coaches, managers, broadcasters, writers, aren't afraid to say it, and I admire that. I like that, and I think it's important, and again, if you're setting the right example, that's the biggest thing. Talking about it is one thing, and doing it and following those words is quite another, and I really admire and respect the people that do that.
How about in your own life? What sustains you spiritually? I mean, we put all our efforts into what we do, our occupation, but also we have to spend time spiritually to kind of fortify ourselves. How is Denny Matthews fortified or fortifies himself in his spiritual life?
Well, I grew up, as you pointed out, in a Catholic family, went to a Catholic high school, and so you have the good foundation and the fundamentals from that point on. And it's just a matter of living your life in that regard. I think that your religion, your faith, is a very private matter. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a privacy between yourself and your faith, and I think you should live it, and you try to do that as best you can. Like I said, if you think about that every day and you get up on the right side of the bed, well, your day should be pretty good. And there are times where you're going to have some adversity, and I think that if you have a good solid faith and a good foundation, you can rely on that to get you through some difficult times.
Especially important for the athletes themselves, and you maybe could give some insight on this, is that, you know, when you're looked upon, notoriety, the money, the fame, the idolatry, if you want to use that word, is thrusted upon you. You really have to stay grounded. Do you see athletes coming forth because they know faith keeps them grounded? What is your perspective on that?
Well, again, I think it's very private, and I really don't delve into an individual's faith or what is motivating him either one way or the other. And so I try to keep things like that very private. I'm not an outgoing person in that regard, and I do admire the people who are living their lives in what I call the right way, and thinking of others, and it's really a personality trait that's very admirable. And I've seen plenty of athletes, and I've seen plenty of people within the broadcast industry who do that. And some will be more outgoing with it than others, and that's fine. That's their personality. That's within their personality, and it's certainly their privilege, and I think they've considered an honor to do that.
When you started in baseball, there was the modern day baseball player today is making a ton of money, but way back when they're making good money, but not a lot of money, but involved sacrifice. Some of them even served our country in the armed forces, so on and so forth. The modern day player, what has changed compared to yesteryear? What are the differences? Is it better for the game that it's more entertaining now? How do you see that?
Oh boy, that's a great question. There are guys who I think are more team guys. There are guys who are in it for themselves, in a sense. And there's not a lot of team loyalty. There are some, but not a lot, because time was when players pretty much, once they got to the big leagues, were going to be with that team for most of their career. And now guys jump around from one team to the other, and it's just the way the game is structured. It's the way the economics of the game have changed through the years. So, again, you better be strong with regard to your lot in life and your faith and your goals and stick to them. And, again, it's difficult for some. Some are better grounded because of their upbringing than others, and you are a product of your environment. And those who are able to change from maybe an environment growing up that wasn't all that conducive to a quote-unquote good life, those who change and begin to understand those things, those are the ones that, that you really admire and respect.
Blessed to play Ron Meyer, once again joined by Denny Matthews, and now in his 50th season as a broadcaster. We could hear him with the Kansas City Royals on Royals Radio. Denny, you've seen a lot of Major League Baseball players. Is there one that sticks out as the best for you or that you admire for their for his talent?
Well, when people ask me that question, and I always refer to the home team, the Royals, the team that I've been with for going on 50 years, as you pointed out, I say that I want to go to the ballpark to see a game. I want to see Dennis Leonard make the start. I want to see Dan Quisenberry or Jeff Montgomery be the closer. I want to see Brett hit. I want to see Frank White play second base. Mm-hmm. I want to see Willie Wilson run out a triple. And if I see those things, why, that'll be a great night at the ballpark.
I want to talk about the pine tar incident. You were with the Royals broadcasting at that time. And when that happened, what was going through your mind? What did you think of the conclusion of it? Walk us through that.
I didn't understand it because there was no rule about the pine tar. Because you could have the pine tar all over your bat, and there was no rule against it. They suggested, and there was a memorandum from the league when guys were working the pine tar up toward the trademark, it was higher than the handle, that they should wipe it off. They didn't want the baseballs, I guess, getting smudged by the pine tar. But there was no rule that said you can't have pine tar all over your bat. It was strongly suggested that the less pine tar above the label or up to the label, that didn't look very good. So I was puzzled. I didn't know what the heck they were talking about. So I wasn't shocked when the thing was reversed. And so there was much made about really shouldn't have been any conflict at all. The home run should have countered right away. Tim McClelland was the plate umpire, as everybody remembers, and he's the one that was a little bit out of line because he ruled that the home run didn't count. Well, why didn't the home run count? There was no rule against the pine tar. So in that regard, it wasn't handled very well from the moment that the ball was struck and ended up in the right field seats at Yankee Stadium.
Well, it's certainly part of baseball lore and a story that folks are going to talk about for many years to come, even though it happened many years ago. I want to talk about modern-day baseball. The Yankees just picked up Giancarlo Stanton. They're loaded up now. There is an uneven playing field that makes it all the more miraculous, I guess you would say, or that the Royals won a World Series during this era with small-market teams. But what's your thoughts on this about the big TV revenue markets, the LAs, the New Yorks of the world, stacking up? I mean, I think the Yankees, if they don't win a World Series, their season will be a failure.
Yeah, there's parity in every sport except baseball, which doesn't have a salary cap. Even if you watch hockey, basketball, professional football, on the pro level, everybody wants parity, and most of the sports have it. Baseball, because of the salary cap, doesn't. That doesn't mean that the team that has the highest payroll is going to win, because a lot of times they don't. This year would be an example of that. So even in college basketball, and I've seen a few games this year, there's a lot of parity in college basketball. There's no great team. There's no great team in hockey, even though Pittsburgh has won the Stanley Cup the last 2 years. There's a lot of parity in that league. There's a lot of parity in the NBA. So I don't know. You hate to see, you know, the wild spending determine who's gonna win at the end, but that's where they're headed. And again, baseball, because it does not have a salary cap, is the one sport where you can really outspend the other guy.
Yeah, indeed. Speaking of hockey, I understand you're a hockey aficionado. You like to lace up the skates every once in a while and go skating, and you follow the NHL quite closely.
I do, and I know a lot of people in the National Hockey League, and yeah, we got a group that plays on Thursday nights. It's great fun. It's good exercise and something to do in the wintertime. You know, I like those nice, tame, quiet sports, and ice hockey, I think, falls into that category, don't you?
Absolutely. And being from Kansas City, who would you follow?
Well, I go back to the original six. I grew up on the Chicago Blackhawks, but, of course, there were only five other teams when I figured out when I was about 18 years old what hockey was. I saw a game on a Saturday afternoon. They did a national game once a week, and I guess one February day I was in the house. It was a crummy weather day, and I was just laying around trying to watch something on TV, and I came on a hockey game. Thought, what the heck are they doing? And I was intrigued enough to watch it the next week, and then I thought, this is pretty cool. no pun intended, and then I started following hockey from that point on. So, when you are a hockey player and you don't learn to skate until you're 17 or 18 years old, you're never going to catch up. But we do okay. It's fun, and as I said, we play with a great group of guys, and it's a kick.
That's great stuff. In your spare time, did you ever get to call a hockey game?
I'm not sure I'd want to. I'd rather watch it. I admire the guys that do hockey because there's so many line changes, and they change lines every 35 to 45, 50 seconds. And if you identify the guys, that'd be the problem for me. The game, I understand. But telling you who's got the puck and who's making good defensive play, you better know the guys. You better know the numbers. And there are now 31 teams, I guess, now in the National League with Vegas. But I think that'd be tough to do, on, especially on radio. I mean, TV, you can get by. But, wow, trying to do a hockey game on that level on radio? Ron, no thank you.
Yep. Well, I have the privilege being in the Pittsburgh market to listen to Mike Lang, and does a bang-up job, especially on the radio side. Well, Denny Matthews has been our guest. What a career, folks. Hall of Famer, Ford Frick Award winner. And Denny, I do appreciate you coming on, not only talking about your career, but that hope within you. And thank you for joining us today right here on Blessed to Play.
You're welcome, Ron.
Hey, Blessed to Play fans, check us out on the web at www.blessedtoplay.com. That's blessed, the number two, play.com. You can like us on Facebook and follow the show right on Twitter at Blessed to Play. For Denny Matthews, I'm Ron Meyer, asking you to compete well for the faith in your everyday life.
You've been listening to Blessed to Play with host Ron Meyer on the EWTN Global Catholic Network. If you have a question or comment about today's show, feel free to email us at info@blessedtoplay.com. That's blessed, the number two, play.com. You can also connect with the show on the web at www.blessedtoplay.com. Again, that's blessed, the number two, play.com. Join us again next time for Blessed to Play on the EWTN Global Catholic Network.